arm you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to No Coast Cinema here on WGM Plus. We're your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And it's been a little while since we've last talked. I know, Connor, you had a bout of sickness.
As did you.
Yeah. I was really run ragged by that week, so we had to take a little time off. And also, it was Oscars week.
Yeah, so we just had to take a little bit to sit down and just come to terms with the fact that, the Academy Awards are not a good example of what denotes quality in film.
And really, I think that's why we more or less decided. It was kind of a tacit agreement that we were just like, we're not really going to talk all that much about it. I think we'll probably we'll connect with our good friend Joseph Flynn over at NIU.
Do a little recap.
Yeah. Amazing film thinker. And even on the night of the Oscars, he tweeted us and he's like, yeah, my boys over at NoCo Cinema, they're probably banging their heads against the wall like I am. We were like, shock doesn't even begin to explain that. So we'll be talking a little bit about that more later. But that's because we've got some good friends here in the studio. Isn't that right, Connor?
Yeah, they've returned for one more bout of film discussion. We have New Trash.
New Trash.
Hey. Hello.
Connor and Nat.
Yeah, introduce yourselves again.
I am Nat Alder of New Trash.
Connor Wiles, also of New Trash.
New Trash.
Yeah. So that
was
so
called.
I'm curious. Is it Newt Rash?
It is. Why Newt is it? Rash. Well,
Nude yeah. Rash.
So Nude what, Rash.
What's yeah. the? I'm a little curious about like the origin story behind the name.
We started trying to make a company that was just like powders for rashes.
Okay,
and that wasn't really working out for us. So
okay.
we decided, maybe music videos.
It is a really like
move
easy
the tea back one space.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Well, you may remember them as the all-star music video auteurs of Chicago. You guys have been really busy lately. A lot of new content coming out.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because we shot most of those videos in
over the summer
yeah. throughout November, and then it's just for whatever reason. Everybody wants to drop them in the same week. So we're just like, cool, yeah, let's do it.
More press, the better.
Yeah, exactly.
The one I recently watched, and correct me on the name, because is it pronounced Michael DeVille?
Michael DeVille.
Yeah. All right. Michael DeVille, you guys did a great video for him. I had never heard of Michael. I was just like, if New Trash is doing it, it must be good. And then I was just like blown away. I was like, wow, this is someone I have to be watching. And that's the benefit of New Trash, in my estimation, is that you get drawn in by these amazing-looking videos, and you're like, oh, wow, this looks well done. This looks to be my sort of thing. And then you get to meet this artist, essentially. Same thing happened to me with Pixel Grip.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I remember last time we had you guys on, that Pixel Grip video was pretty new.
Golden Moses.
Yeah, Golden Moses. That became like my track of the year. I think I said on Twitter, I was like, I need this played at my funeral. Like, is my absolute jam. And now they've got their album release coming up in April, I want to say.
At Sleeping Village, which is right by, anyway, let's go to it, Tom. We should totally go to that.
Be there.
It's called Heavy Handed, and it'll be out April 4th.
Fantastic.
See, I know some stuff.
I don't know if it's April 4th.
I think so.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
And something.
We'll check the Bandcamp on that.
Yeah.
The Michael DeVille thing was cool for me because he actually performed at, or actually he hosted a live screening for that I did for a live Q&A for Blacksite the musical Soft Cage Films.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw him, and then I see you guys release the video for him for his new record, which is beautiful. And it's been getting a lot of traction. Like, it was on the news the other day, right?
Yes,
it was on Fox, I think.
Oh,
I
mean,
what's that like?
Seeing it on like TV.
Seeing your guys' work just blowing up like that.
It was pretty cool. I mean, it's just really cool to see like footage from your video and then just like a banner under it saying like Family Guy coming up at like 9/8 Central.
It's interesting seeing it recontextualized.
Yeah.
I think that's always a fun experience. But I think it was just a project we were happy to be a part of. And like you said, Michael, he does it all. Actor,
poet,
yeah,
writer, but Maintain's great. It's out. Release show tomorrow, which I don't know when this, but
will have been yesterday.
Yeah, will have been yesterday.
Sorry. It was a great show.
Sorry, guys.
So he also, yeah, Maintain just came out, but pleasure to work with, and that was a really interesting shoot. We have to give credit to awesome DP, David Hughes Jr.
David Hughes, man.
Who ran around with us and our producer, Ramon. And we were just in a car, and it was pouring rain, and we just kind of chased the day and drove around to different parts of the city.
Yeah, there's that shot, I don't know if you guys remember, where it's just Michael in the car, and we're booming down Lakeshore Drive. And that was one that I think we got up there at like 7 in the morning.
That was the first shot of the day.
Of the day to beat morning traffic. And we were waiting for this like torrent of rain to come down. And like there was no traffic. There were no cars on Lakeshore when we got that shot. And we did it in one take. And literally right when the take ended, like the rain started pouring down. So we thought we would have to probably cancel the shoot for the rest of the day, and we ended up like parking in that Mariano's parking lot and just waiting. And while it was raining, we just decided to like send David and Ramon in the car and light up that car and just have them do some interior car takes. And then by the time they were done, the rain was gone.
So they just continued on.
Yes. Nice. And we just kind of bounced around town. And credit to Michael, because he kind of served as like the producer first AD in a lot of ways, where he had this whole list of talented people that he wanted to be on the video. So he had them sort of pre-selected in different parts of the town.
Right.
So it was like, okay, we're done with Humboldt. Let's go over to Wicker. Let's do this over here. So,
hey, yeah, can you bring your...
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, you're good. There it is.
Am I sultry now?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Good.
It's like 95% more sultry.
Okay, good. I'm ready for the porns.
So, the shoot.
So Michael had all these people. He was directing in a way himself.
It's super collaborative, where he was like, these are the people we want, and these are some of the locations we were thinking of. And we were like, okay, like we will make fun coverage out of this and just sort of go around the city where we can. And we got so lucky in Humboldt Park, because there was... I don't know if it was in Humboldt, but there was like a big festival going on.
There's a street parade.
Yeah.
So we just kind of walked in and we're like, all right, I guess we got a parade in the video now. That's cool.
That's what I love about you guys.
Yeah. A carnival ride.
Yeah.
Not a parade.
Right.
That's what I love about your guys' work, is that it feels like you're very much willing to open up the creative process to whatever is around you.
Mm-hmm.
You can adapt something and turn it into a creative choice. So, you know, even if the rain was disrupting something, like where you're just like, oh, well, now we're shooting in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can we use this? How can we incorporate this into the video? Mm-hmm. And it still would turn out really great. Why is that so much part of your artistic ethos? Why not just be like, well, we want it exactly this way, very Kubrickian, like, oh, well, if I don't get my shot, then we're not doing it.
It needs 50 takes or not at all.
Right. Yeah. I think because Kubrick and Fincher can afford to do
exactly.
And I think we always say the same, where it's like, oh, we just didn't have time. But we don't.
Yeah. And we just want to make something, and we want it to be done and be able to get put out there.
I don't know who said it, but one of our favorite people on Twitter, Film Crit Hulk. One of our faves. It was that retweet a couple days ago where somebody was like, man, I just spent 2 years on a short film and it didn't get into anything. It's like,
that sucks.
He was like, you made the experience was what you gained. And it the experience of making it, of crafting it, of, you know, fucking things up and fixing them, like, it's that experience, and it's just about making the best product you can while you can.
He said, don't
wait. Put it out.
Make 100.
And move on to the next one.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of the mentality we have, is, you know, make it the best you can with what you got. But Michael and Pixel Grip were very similar, where the idea for Pixel Grip was they had been working with Orbox, the featured performer in that.
Right.
And it was like, we just kind of want to get magical dancing in very traditional environments. So Nat just went around, and we had just moved, I think, to Humboldt pretty recently.
Yeah, we had.
After that. But you went to that, where was that church?
I went to a church called Carpenter's House. I looked it up on Google Maps because I saw they had a big parking lot.
I guess Christ's house was taken.
Christ's house was taken, unfortunately. Yeah. And there were no synagogues, so I couldn't work my magic with that. But there was a this church called Carpenter's House, and I went over there, and I just told them we wanted to do this dance video that was going to be very expressive, and we just needed to use their parking lot. for a couple hours at night, and they said they were down. They asked for our video name, and I gave it to them, and thankfully they did not look us up.
Yeah.
They would have found some, I'm sure, very questionable shit from their perspective, but they were very gracious to us.
Yeah.
And they let us use their space overnight.
Shout out to Carpenter's house.
Yeah.
The first time that we saw you guys, Tom and I went to go see Cinema Obscura on a Monday, and we were watching one of your guys' videos that you had made for a punk rock band. I can't remember what it was, but...
Was it the one with, like, the Barney sort
of deal? Yeah, there was that, and then the one that was before it was, like, this laser shootout.
Yeah, there was a...
Oh, Peekaboos.
The Peekaboos, now known as Lollygagger.
Yes, that's their new band name.
Yeah.
And as soon as we watched it, we had to find John Davies, who puts on Cinema Obscura, and shout out to him, but
yes.
we were just like, we have to have these guys on. And the thing that struck me, I don't know about Tom, but was just the punk rock thing that was just seemed to sort of pervade all of your filmmaking, and it still carries over. And now you guys have gone, you know, you made music videos that have been released on like Def Jam, and you guys have made a foray into hip hop music. I just wanted to ask, like, it seems very organic, but like it's tough for Tom and I to get together. How do you guys organize these huge groups of people to come together and yet still make it just seem like it's just a hangout almost?
I think a lot of it is we know when to shut up and step back.
Yeah.
And I think something that it took me, I know I can't speak for you, but it took me a while to learn was your best work usually happens when you have to, when you just realize what is there and you don't have to push, you know. And there's such a colorful array of characters in the DIY scene and in music, you know, musicians, even when they're at the level of DIY, like they know, and they know what their vibe and their image and their attitude.
Yeah.
And I found more and more our job is just to present the talent in the best way we can. And I think a lot of
posts, you know.
Yeah. So I think letting those people feel comfortable to be themselves, and usually it's because the cast is like all their friends.
Yeah.
Because they're like, yeah, well, we need this and that. We're like, cool. How many people do you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And you had a great experience with that, Connor, making your first feature film with just all your high school buddies, and that gave you a lot of good experience, sort of corralling.
Oh, just people.
Act. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's, you know, it's action verbs.
Exactly.
As George Lucas once said, faster and more intense.
Yeah. Right. Happier and with your mouth open even more.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I think we're just lucky to be around people who are confident and they want to be putting out the best product just as much. So I think when you don't have money for the best setups or the best, like we can't like, okay, we're going to do an overhead going like through Chicago and do this. It's you fall back on personality and you fall back on the people around you, which I think reinforce your artistry.
All you have is teamwork. Like with Pixel Grip, that Plastic Enemies video, even like Pixel Grip was there the whole night with us, even though they're not
they
in
there.
The video.
Yeah.
They were just there and
they were doing spotlights.
Spotlights. So in that ultra wide, you see where Orb is dancing against that big wall that's at Chicago on it. You see those lights spinning. That's John and Rita.
Grip.
That's just Pixel Grip spinning those lights. So it's just really, it's really awesome when you have people that are just that down to do their part.
And it's kind of strange because the people that we're working, that you're working with, and the people that we're seeing in the music videos generally, like you will see them around. Like you know, when we're watching big music videos like Ariana Grande, you're like, okay, you're not going to see Ariana Grande on the street. Most likely. It's a very rare occurrence. But
you haven't seen her on the street yet?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Around, like,
she was just at Starbucks.
Yeah, like,
come on.
Old radio story. I used to work for a company that puts on large concerts and owns a lot of radio stations.
No, we won't say the name.
Can't say the name, but you might heart them. But... I did meet Ariana Grande once.
Oh. Really? How was she? Did she say thank you next?
I wish she had. That would have been
nicer. How many rings did she have?
Did she have
seven?
She was tired. She was like, oh my. She was getting, well, not tired. She was getting ready to perform and stuff like that. She was very curt, but you know,
that's the nicest way to I've ever heard someone call somebody rude.
You have to be honest with yourself when you're dealing with that level of talent. But I was not to freak out anybody from Pixel Grip to be like name dropping or something, but I was at like the Hideout a couple weeks ago, and just there's Rita.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God. Like, I was like, I was kind of a little starstruck.
That's
I didn't say, you know, I loved, she was having a good time doing whatever, but I was like, wow, you know, I saw her in this music video. I love her music and there she is. And I feel a sense of community and connection.
That's great.
And that's what I really appreciate about the way that New Trash does videos, is that it's not this sort of glorification or starification of the people. You're just putting an artistic vision to tape, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And you're putting it on video so that people can also feel that connection with the people who are in their city making art. And that's what makes New Trash so much fun.
Thank you.
And I guess I want to bring it to a larger scale in terms of the popularity of music videos in general. I think there was a time when we got into the, I don't know, YouTube era and like the stratification of media, like post MTV's popularity. Like MTV's more or less done as it used to be. It's found a different life in as like
reality
MTV
TV.
News.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like all these different things. And there, I know people working for MTV, they're doing really cool stuff that I never would have imagined MTV doing 10 years ago.
Right.
But we're past this like centralized idea of music videos being the thing. It's not MTV in the 80s and 90s where it's like, that's what you did. Like, you wanted to know what was cool, you watched MTV. Now, not so much. But music videos seem to be coming back, seeping back into the popular culture.
Absolutely.
You know, we mentioned Ariana Grande.
Yep.
Thank You Next has been watched, or it's been liked 88.8 million times. It's been watched like 300 million times. It's like everybody's talking about the Thank You Next video.
Yep.
Drake had a video like
the
late
Degrassi
last year.
One.
Yeah, the Degrassi one that people talked about, and it was part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And why do you think music videos are making this somewhat of a comeback where people are like, oh, you know the song, but have you seen the video? Like Jay and Silent Bob, fucking Kevin Smith, and whatever the fuck
Jason
is
Mewes.
Jason Mewes. Were in a like a Degrassi throwback video for Drake. I never thought I would ever see
that. That's exactly what it is. It's the talk factor, right? Where it's like, have you seen that thing that has that thing in it? You know, and it's on YouTube, so it's so readily accessible.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge part of it.
Well, it speaks to the larger thing of how media consumption has changed so much, but I think the part that we're just kind of starting to see now is how the consumption has really changed the dialogue and our own mental processing of things. Because I was really thinking about this, like watching, not to swerve too hard, but the Cohen hearings this week, which was the best show on TV.
Right, of course. Bombshell.
I was really thinking about how do I interact with the outside world, and all of my media is in my Twitter feed, but it's not just Drake and Deadline. It's all the shit happening in the government and around the world. And I think really thinking about people who, kids, where that it's all at the same level now. Like we used to have really clear levels of media division
separation
that go into the hierarchy of it, of movies are more important than TV, more important than theater. And that's gone because it's all just becoming content. Mm-hmm. And whether it's through the web or through Netflix or through on a movie theater, eventually it's all going to just become content. So we're losing this level of what is considered valued or not, like what has a cultural value. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that everything is coming back in terms of what you said with music videos is that's the new chart. Like, you know, Billboard's cool, but it's your Spotify streams and it's your YouTube plays.
Right. Right.
And YouTube is, I think for a lot of people, like actually their main social media platform now. Like it's not even just a place where, like, because if you use YouTube on your mobile, it's been changed really consistently over the years to reflect more of a news feed where you can just post updates for like text updates on your YouTube app for like
you don't
your
have
fans.
You don't have to do the vlog.
Right.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
I think when you put it all in the same box, no matter what level it's at, it kind of gives everything that same level of importance or cultural potential for that.
Mm-hmm.
So music videos have really come back in that way. And I think it's because everyone's watching. We're watching more than ever. And
Twitter,
I don't know.
Twitter is a big.
Twitter is that.
Twitter's massive.
But I look at, you know, stuff like WorldStar, where they have like a complete empire.
Yes.
Just based off, you know, drops and
people fighting.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
That too.
Well, but you've seen that, but I even more now, it's the legitimate thing of getting premieres and like paying the 700 or 800 fee to like drop on WorldStar.
It's a big deal.
And getting guaranteed because I think it's music videos have always been a good way to sell someone's sound, image, and look all in one package. And so it's kind of across the board.
Do you guys remember the name of the site that, because I got into Chance, like many people my age, through Acid Rap. Mm-hmm. Like some people, there were the people who were really like up on it who got in through 10 Day. Mm-hmm. And then, but I would say a lot of my college crowd really latched on for Acid Rap. What was the, was it Dat Piff? I think
it was the site
that hosted his mixtape.
I'm not familiar. Yeah,
yeah, I think it was called something like Dat Piff.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Like, and but it speaks to exactly what you're saying, where it's like Chance the Rapper came up without having ever commercially released an album,
right?
Until I think three.
Well, Coloring Book, wasn't that an Apple exclusive?
Or Coloring Book? Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. That's it.
But he's still doing everything independently.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he
rose to a point, I think Chance 3 and Coloring Book are the same. Like that's what his third album's called, or
I just know most recent Coloring one. Book. Yeah,
yeah. Regardless, I think it's called Coloring Book. Shows how much I really know about.
Anyway, the point was
the first time he commercially released an album.
Mm-hmm. Right,
like everything else, it was like it's going to be free. I'm going to drop it as a mixtape on this website. Mm-hmm. You can stream it on YouTube exclusively,
yeah.
But for free.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I really am interested in that idea. Connor, that you mentioned of the kind of flattening of the landscape where it's like there's no more like movies are more important than TV. In fact, we might be getting to the point where TV might really be more important than movies.
Well, okay, well, TV's the medium of the day.
Yeah,
it really is. And all those, sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, go
from
ahead.
One Connor to another.
Yeah, if we could. I'm glad that you guys both are talking about like the stratification or the hierarchy is leveling out. And I would even say that short form content nowadays is an even better channel to make a statement, which
it's crazy. That movie that just won the Oscar, period, end of sentence. I was like, when am I going to be able to see that? And it was literally on Netflix.
The next yeah, you could watch yesterday.
That day. Yeah. It was crazy.
Well, short form, yeah. Speaking of Netflix, let's hop on over to a little bit of news that really is dealing in the backlash to this sort of thing. Spielberg versus Netflix, something I never thought I would have been saying in my entire life. He's Steven Spielberg, who is at least... I'm going to say, and people might disagree, but I think he's in the conversation for like top five living American directors.
Absolutely.
And perhaps like best of all time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, I think there's a GOAT conversation for him. Mm-hmm. Because really, we look at him now as kind of this somewhat of a relic of the past. Like he's released stuff in the new millennium, but none of it's really reached the same heights as what's considered his classic canon during the 70s.
They only
80s,
win like
90s.
Two or three Oscars every time.
They just get the noms.
They get the noms, and maybe Mark Rylance finally gets one for Bridge of Spies, which is a movie I think everybody's already forgotten.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
But he's really in the conversation, and he was someone that would be considered an innovator in the business. I mean, he created the modern idea of the blockbuster. Like before Jaws, movies would get like maybe 1,000 theaters here, and then a run of 1,000 theaters here.
It was even less. I mean, it was the
roadshow mentality. Yes. That's where the blockbusters of the pre-Jaws age lived.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know? So spread them out.
Yeah, spread them out. They released over a period of time, but Jaws comes in, and he's like, you know what? Here's what's going to happen. And it's not all Spielberg, but they decided, here's what we're going to do. We're going to release Jaws everywhere at the same time with a relentless marketing campaign. Yep.
And it totally worked.
And
what better way for a trendsetter like Steven Spielberg to do now that he's gotten older 30 years later to come out and speak out and draw a line in the sand against an emerging trend? Yeah, am I right?
Because there's an argument to make that eventually movies were going to do that. Mm-hmm. What Jaws did. It's just that Jaws happened to be the first one, and I think Spielberg believed in it. Now he is, as Connor said, drawing a line in the sand, saying that Netflix movies should not be available for Academy Award contention. He's got a list of grievances, and this is, you know, just kind of the short idea of what he's getting at. One, Netflix spent too much. By the way, getting this from IndieWire.com, Netflix spent too much money. One Oscar strategist estimated Roma at $50 million in Oscar spend, with Green Book at $5 million in Oscar spend. So they spent a lot, way too much money promoting it, I suppose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The New York Times said $25 million, and Netflix is very cautious with their numbers. They generally don't release a lot of numbers, a lot of data on what they do. Two, the massive Roma push crushed foreign language distributors. Sony Pictures Classic co-president Michael Barker said he had no financial option but to release Oscar nominees Never Look Away and Capernaum when theaters opened up after the holidays, which meant fewer Academy voters had the chance to see them. Roma only spent 3 weeks as a theatrical exclusive. Netflix doesn't report box office. Netflix doesn't respect the 90-day theatrical window. And I think this is the biggest one that I would really be willing to engage with. Netflix movies are available in 190 countries 24/7.
Yeah.
And I really, that's the one where I'm like, okay, I kind of see what you're saying. But I was thinking about this a little bit earlier. Is this not Spielberg just being kind of pissed off that he didn't get on the Netflix bandwagon as early as other people did? Because look at Scorsese, one of his contemporaries. Scorsese's got The Irishman coming out, which is going to be huge. You know, he's Pesci is back after, I don't know, what was the last movie he did? My Cousin Vinny?
Something like that.
Yeah, who knows?
You've got Al Pacino, Robert De Niro. It's basically the cast of Heat and then My Cousin Vinny. Yeah. all coming together to, this is, you know, this is going to be one of the biggest releases that Netflix has ever done with a name that is not just respected commercially, but also artistically.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe, is Spielberg just pissed off that he did not do that, or does he have a point?
I don't think he's pissed off that he can't get a Netflix deal. I'm sure he could. I'm sure he could if he tried. He owns his own movie studio, you know. So I think with that dude, I think he's trying to preserve a lot of the relationships that he has with exhibitors and distributors. Obviously he's very he loves the theatrical experience, and you got to respect that. But I think he's trying to find a way to keep exhibitors happy. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big thing at the end of the day. And it's the thing with Scorsese is, like, why did he go with Netflix? Because maybe they were the only people that would give him $100 million to make that movie, you know? So I don't know.
Silence wasn't exactly a crowd pleaser.
No.
And that was in the making for, like, literally decades.
Yeah, I do not think that made its money back.
No. I can't imagine it did. And
what was that, like a $6 million budget?
Something like that. It was pretty big.
Jeez. And I can't believe that this is the way he wants to go. And I know he's got his business interests. I think that's a very astute observation, Nat. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. But I don't know. He could just... Why not just get on the bandwagon at this point? Because this is the way we're going to watch a lot of our content now. It's readily available. It's cost effective for at least for the consumer. And while I have my own reservations about streaming services and where that's going to go, especially with this year, we're going to be seeing stratification of that when it comes to introducing things like Disney Plus.
Apple
wants to get into the streaming game. But it's a fascinating way to get people to watch movies. Think of how many more people saw Roma.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
In a high quality format. Like, they're streaming that shit in 4K. Yeah. A lot of people have 4K TVs now. And frankly, you know, we live in Chicago. Indie movies come here.
Yes.
They will exhibit at the Music Box.
Yes.
They will exhibit at different large theaters. Like, we're right down the street from the AMC 21, which is, like, one of the biggest movie theaters I've ever been to in terms of screen numbers. Mm-hmm. So there's a chance for movies to play here. If you're in buttfuck Idaho, they're not showing Roma at your theater.
Exactly.
They're probably showing whatever's in widest release. Well, so look,
I grew up in Honduras. I lived there for, I think, 7 years when I was a kid. And the biggest thing for me as a movie buff was movies would take a year and a half to get to Honduras. So it was a thing of, like, man, I wish I had Netflix back then. I wish I had a library of movies that all came out at the same time for everybody, and I could be a part of that conversation. And that's a huge benefit that I don't think he's really talking about right now.
Right.
It's frustrating.
I think that you can engage with Steven Spielberg's arguments against Netflix, but I think just the easiest retort to him is, like, easy for you.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, right.
You're like we said, he's, like, high in the running for best American director, and he's in the conversation for, like, The GOAT, right?
Yeah, yeah. The dude made Jurassic Park and Schindler's List in the same year.
Yeah, like, he's a machine, obviously, but he also, even though he was a trendsetter, he was kind of a victim of buying into the old channels that you had to go through in order to make a movie. You had to start your own studio and you have to like get your own, you know, fundraisers together and everything.
Which is so ironic because he was part of these new Hollywood guys. He was in there
look what happened to all those guys.
Right.
Sans Scorsese, because De Palma just dropped off, but the rest of them became very like tech format obsessed. And like, you know, Coppola was directing movies sitting in a fucking trailer just like speaking over intercom,
losing his fucking mind.
And that's no respect, like no disrespect, you know, but I when you hear Spielberg say that stuff, it's kind of, you're like, it's that dude at Reckless who's like, well, I mean, if you're not listening to it on vinyl, are you listening to music? That's what I hear. But I think it's kind of on the same page that distribution and access means something different, but it's that old new split that's manifesting everywhere. And I think we saw that pretty openly in the Oscars, like between the young folks and people who were winning the awards, like the people themselves and what they were saying and what that meant to them. And then like who won Best Picture, you know, there's a huge split. And you're like, how do these two things actually like coexist?
There's a massive distance.
And it's moving, but he's just protecting his space. And I think for those dudes, it's the same thing. Like, people are like, how are you going to watch a movie on your phone? Like, how many times do you hear that, right?
Right.
But
David Lynch.
Now everyone's doing it. Like, even, like, older folks or people who weren't as hip to adapt, or even a lot of the people where there were those financial barriers. Like, now you can get a 40-inch HD TV for, like, $200, and you can get subscriptions. So it's really kind of broadening out to everyone now. And I don't know, you know,
Movie Pass is also an example in its heyday where you saw people buying into it and saying, oh, look, here's a cheap way to go to theaters. Fuck yeah, I'll do that.
I want
to
see a lot more movies.
Yes, absolutely. But so I would say to him, like, okay, dude, find a way to lower ticket prices.
Well,
like,
exactly. Hey, man, do that. 1 month subscription of Netflix is the same as one ticket to one movie at AMC 21.
How ridiculous is that?
And that's what I want to talk, like, what is Steven Spielberg, who's his audience? Who's he's like talking to the 10 to 12 directors who it's like, oh, why aren't you just a multi-million dollar director that gets fucking free license to make whatever movie you
I'm sure Christopher Nolan was happy about it.
Yeah, well, exactly.
He is talking to the industry. Yeah, like, I think that's really more that it's not. And I don't think, I haven't read the official statement. Yeah. I've just been reading about, it was like I woke up and there was like a civil war broke out on Twitter. But it's been, it's a really interesting litmus test. And I feel like the reaction to what Spielberg said is speaking a little more to the reality of the world than what he actually said, because you see people like Joseph Kahn and like contemporary filmmakers who are doing digital release, like a YouTube Red movie for Bodied, and everyone's just kind of coming out on different sides, and it seems like a much more intricate and varied conversation that is being provoked by what he said than the actual statement.
And let's even look at people like Steven Soderbergh. I mean, he just released High Flying Bird on Netflix, which was entirely shot on an iPhone. And that's not the first time a filmmaker has done that. We only need to look at something like Tangerine, which was also shot entirely on an iPhone. So it's not that he doesn't even, I don't think he even sees himself as being like a trendsetter in that. He just saw that and he's like, you know what? I want to try doing that shit.
Yeah.
And recently, I want to say it was at Sundance, Christopher Nolan said to Steven Soderbergh, he's like, when are you going to come back to film? And Steven Soderbergh's like,
Yeah, when you write in crayon or something?
Yeah, when you start writing your scripts in crayon. And I was just like, damn, what an astute response. And I'm here for the film revivalists in terms of them being like, I like the quality of it. I like the way it looks. The same way I'm here for the vinyl revivalists, where they're just like, there's something about this medium that speaks to me. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's when you get into this sort of like, these normative statements where you're just like, you should be shooting on film because this is the way it has to be done. No, this is not the world we live in. It's 2019.
It's parts of a whole.
You can you can shoot an entire feature on your fucking phone. How is that not exciting to people?
And Soderbergh's the most interesting, like, I think he is a legitimate trendsetter, because that dude released that movie Bubble, was the first ever day and date VOD release, and it was 10 years before Netflix streaming happened, before VOD was an actual thing. And he talks about it in a really interesting way in terms of how insecure theater exhibitors are when it comes to that window of release, that 90-day window of release. They really want that space to be able to compete amongst themselves. And what Soderbergh said with a movie like Unsane was, he was like, you know what, that movie came out first weekend, bombed like a motherfucker. Why can I not yank that movie from theaters when I know it's not playing well for a week and just put it on VOD immediately?
Yeah. And see if it can find an audience.
Find an audience. Yeah. After you put all that money into marketing. So I think there can be a happy medium where maybe they can shrink the theatrical windows down from 90 days to something a little more reasonable, like 3 weeks or something. And then from there, go on a case by case basis where you can say, hey, this movie is really not doing well.
Right.
We should put it out on Netflix. And you actually see that in international releases. Like, I don't know if you guys remember how Annihilation came out on Netflix in Europe the same week it came out in theaters in the States, because they knew it was not going to make its money back.
Yeah, right.
So if people are okay with that, it's just why would they not be okay with doing that domestically? And I think it's just theaters are very insecure about
it's all
revenue.
About the money, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of the day, this wouldn't be a conversation if they knew how to make their money out of either way.
Yeah.
And that's really all this is we're just waiting for them to figure out the new model where everybody gets a slice.
Yes.
Yeah. And then it won't be a problem.
That's super key.
I think that's the death throes of the dinosaurs. Right.
Well, let me be clear. As I've said many times on this show, I work in a movie theater. And thankfully it's an independently owned movie theater. I don't have to deal with Regal or AMC or whoever the fuck owns these movie theaters. And I think we all as consumers of film value the theatrical experience as well as what we can gain from watching things at home.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see is the problem is that people don't seem to realize that the theatrical experience and the streaming experience can be mutually exclusive things.
People can go to concerts and stream an album, you know, at the same time.
And there's theaters like the Music Box that prove that. People will go out to the music. You know how easy it is to watch fucking Ghost in the Shell, the original Ghost in the Shell, on your TV? So easy. Mm-hmm. Cost you maybe $4.
Yeah.
But is it the same as going with all your friends, getting some popcorn, getting a beer,
maybe a daisy cutter?
Yeah, maybe a daisy. Sitting in a theater.
That's like the cheap one, right?
Yeah.
That's what I get every time.
It's only $17.
But going into a theater with like 300 to 500 other people and experiencing it together, these are things that don't have to be different. That can be different. And they don't have to try to compete with each other. I think it's just the theater business needs to adapt. Now, they've tried. They thought 3D was going to do it. Didn't work out. You put too many chips into James Cameron.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good, you know, great director. Not that wasn't the tech that was going to do it.
Sure, some people shit with their mouths open, but not enough. Not enough, James.
Not enough, Jim.
Battle Angel, though. That should be good.
I've heard
good things.
That's a movie to watch. But, you know, they thought that was going to do it. Then they thought it was like the dining experience, which there are theaters out there that have made a business out of that.
Yes.
Shout out to the Alamo Drafthouse, which has clearly found its audience with people doing that experience.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, maybe it's not enough to scale it to a national thing where that's going to be the norm. So what do they do? Well, maybe it's reclining seats. Well, you know, I don't really need people's ass sweat. You know, theater seats are kind of gross enough on average.
Especially if it's right after a James Cameron film.
That's like 2.5, 2:45 worth of ass sweat there.
It's brutal.
I think it's what theaters need to do is give people a reason to go back to the movies. And I think going to this model of showing older films, showing things on 35, you know, appealing to the film nut that I think lives in even the most casual of moviegoers.
And good movies too. I mean,
Battle Angel.
Right.
Come on.
I don't like A Quiet Place, but I was very happy to see that an original horror film got a bunch of people off of their asses to go see a movie.
I always feel better when I'm really pissed off at a movie, but I'm in a theater.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can be communally pissed,
too. You have to be quiet and think about why you're angry.
Yeah.
Because you can't just yell at the screen. Because I'm probably the worst person to watch movies with at home.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was watching Glass at the Logan Theater. Have you guys seen Glass?
No, does he break?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I about broke. Me and about 15 other people. It's exactly. It's so fun to go and watch a movie and have an experience that, even if it's not a great experience, it's still way more fun than watching, say, Equilibrium for the second time and being wow, this is super stupid and super serious.
Well, that's an interesting point, and I wonder the divide that we see with the people who are really prioritizing the theatrical experience. You know, they're older, but Spielberg didn't have VHS tapes when he was growing up.
Right.
So I think about a lot, your formative experiences with media and how you interact with it, or from a young age and what that means to you. And they all talk about my dad took me to the theater and I saw John Wayne.
Yeah. Stagecoach.
But I know I can only speak for myself and my friends and generations growing up, but it's getting that DVD and putting it in at the house party.
Yeah.
Hanging out with those people, VHS tapes at slumber parties, that we all grew up, and the majority of our experience with media is in a home environment. So it's not strange and it doesn't feel wrong. Because I didn't see Goodfellas in theaters.
I didn't
see all that jazz. Yeah, I wasn't alive, but that movie still communicates magic to me.
Yeah.
And I can still love it without seeing it there. So I think it's an easier jump to go from watching a VHS tape to being, my phone is really not that different.
Yeah.
Because it's the medium, and it's I wouldn't watch a movie on a phone, but I watch YouTube on my phone all day.
Yeah.
All day, every day.
Yeah. So, it's all,
Even Connor and I, we watched Roma, which is a beautifully shot film.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It's a film that even I did not get to see it in theaters.
Neither did I.
We didn't see it during that short run, despite everybody you need to see it.
You've got to see it in fucking theaters.
And I commend them for wanting to push that, because it is a movie that I think warrants it. Shot in 70mm.
Yeah.
I think if you can, go for it. But Connor and I could have, and then we sat at my house,
cracked open a couple of Daisy Cutters. not really.
We had a big special barrel aged beer, and we did put it in the nice glasses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We put it in the nice glasses, and we sat there and watched Roma together, and we talked a little bit through it. We were like, oh wow, I really like this. It was that experience that you were talking about, the home experience of maybe when we were 10 years old, we were sitting at home in front of a DVD or a VHS with a liter of cola.
Yep, getting sick on candy. Yeah. And just exactly.
And then you play GoldenEye afterward.
Yeah.
Yes.
And not to get too far away from this, but I think that what's also important to realize about Roma is that movie, if that had gone through a traditional channel, like a traditional film studio, that movie would not look the way, or would not be the same movie.
Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
Artistic freedom that people get through Netflix is
pretty amazing.
I think it's I think it's just the future, right? I mean, there's less studio interference because Netflix is like, I have so much shit I have to do right now. I'm trying to take over the world. Trying to take over the world. I don't have time to micromanage you.
Just I don't care about
my name's
Jeremy
at the end
Saulnier.
Credits. I think that's the future. And I understand that, Steven Spielberg, what I think we're getting at here is the older people are kind of upset that they will go outside one day and the world's the sky is green and they're like, how the fuck did that happen?
And everybody else is like, oh, you weren't there?
Yeah
right.
You didn't watch my YouTube video about it?
Well, I'm curious, you mentioned Netflix, they're trying to take over the world, and what happens when they do? I guess what is the business model when everyone has a Netflix subscription?
Right.
When everybody has it. And I think that's part of one side of the anti-Netflix conversation that I've seen is, it's kind of the funny part where he's like, they don't release their numbers and they don't do this. And I'm like, oh yeah, because studios are just renowned for their transparency.
Exactly.
I'm like, how much money did you lose on
Solo?
Yeah. Or, whatever. Let's probably not talk about Star Wars. I don't want to get doxxed. Yeah.
But no, that's a good point, is that if Netflix achieves what they want to achieve, what then? Do we just keep? And there is a lot of stuff on Netflix that is just complete crap.
It's terrible. Oh, yeah.
It's content.
Yeah,
it's
personally content. Glad that we got to see Velvet Buzzsaw on Netflix instead of going to see it on the theater.
I like Netflix a lot more when I watch something and I'm like, man, fuck that. I'm
that
glad I didn't pay
sucked.
For that.
Yeah.
But
you kind of did.
Oh. Well,
does anybody actually pay for Netflix? Art, I feel like
art is dangerous, guys. Didn't you get that from Velvet Buzzsaw? Sometimes you lose $11 on risking going to see a movie.
Paintings kill you.
The risk is what makes it valuable.
Right. I want to pivot into something that streaming has really done for me in terms of as I became a more serious film fan, and I know that sounds a little pretentious. Like I love cinema.
Cinema.
Yeah. Cinema.
Cinema.
as they say in Italy.
The Blancoscuro.
But
you guys didn't tell me Viggo Mortensen was going to be here.
Los Tecnicos Cinematicos.
Let me see this. Side note,
did you know the guy who's playing Tony Lip was in The Sopranos?
Yes, I saw that on Twitter. That's really? The most insane shit.
Which guy did he play again?
He plays Carmine.
The Italian guy.
Carmine Senior.
I like how we're all
New York bus. Hey! He plays at the New York bus. Come on.
But yeah, no, that was weird. Tony Lip is in The Sopranos. But one of my favorite streaming services is Shudder.
Shudder.
Yes.
And I have to shout out, I have to give them really big props because they're part of this small sect of streaming services that that doesn't try to use an algorithm.
Mm-hmm. No.
It's everything they put on is curated by a team of people that say, okay, we're going to put these movies on here for this reason. We think these people want to watch, mm-hmm. right? And granted, I use Shudder through like an ancillary streaming service called Verve, which is from the people who created Crunchyroll. And it's nice. Like an aggregate streaming service where you pay like $11 a month, but you get access to the content of like seven different streaming nice. Services.
Oh, okay.
And they used to have Mubi, which is kind of like a lot of indie stuff. Mubi's dope.
Yeah.
And they have a similar model to Shudder where they're just like, yeah, we're going to curate this for you. You get, well, isn't it like 30 films for 30 days?
30 films, 30 days, and each day one movie leaves, one movie joins the pack.
Which is a really cool idea, I think, for people who watch a lot of movies. I think that's a great one. But I found it an invaluable resource for getting into movies I would possibly, and most people would possibly never see in their entire lives unless someone recommended it to you. Odd Obsession, they do a lot of recommendation. I think everybody who works there is pretty much a volunteer.
Nice.
And they really spend a lot of time curating, and I think that's really important. But being able to go on Shudder and find all this stuff that I'm just like, what the fuck is this? This is crazy. Led me to the amazing Female Prisoner Scorpion series, which we were talking a little bit off mic. I'm so glad that a streaming service doesn't just have them, but has all of them.
All of them.
And in pristine, like, remastered quality.
And they all came out the same year, so you genuinely don't know which one is which. You're like, which one's four, which one's two? I don't know.
And it's kind of pre when they started numbering things, because I'm pretty sure The Godfather Part II is the first time a sequel was ever numbered.
Really?
Yeah. Because they
didn't just call it something else, they called it Part II.
Because, if you look at the Female Prisoner Scorpion series, they all have a different title.
Yeah,
like they're kind of not, they're a little bit nonsense,
like
Grudge Song or Beast Stable, Jailhouse 41.
Sounds like metal albums,
but these are pretty metal movies.
Okay,
like,
so
if you like Mandy,
metal movies.
Yeah, if you like Mandy, these are pretty metal as fuck.
Yes,
before we get into these, you said it's a great opportunity for the Shudder is to get people into movies that they might not actually see. I have not seen any of these movies, and all three of you have. So why don't you guys sell me on the on the films?
Okay, so why don't you get? You guys have seen all of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You marathoned them recently, right?
Yeah,
a couple months ago.
Right? Yeah, semi recent.
Give us the elevator pitch of sorts of like what are these movies?
It's Female Prisoner Scorpion is about a woman who is somehow associated with the mafia in Japan. I can't remember what her role is, but she gets set up somehow and left for dead, and she gets sent to prison. And pretty much the series is about this woman finding a commune of other badass chicks in prison, and it's pretty much them against the system.
Right.
For the first two.
For the first two, at least, because the other one, she's on the run.
Yeah. She gets out of prison.
It's pretty much where did that Kill Bill sensibility come from?
Yes,
that's what I was going to ask.
This is root stuff. And,
okay.
I'm a big fan of prison movies, especially in the grindhouse sense, like women in prison as a genre with like its own cliches and
tropes. Black Mama, White Mama with Pam Grier.
Yeah, or like Sweet Sugar, you know, stuff like, or Women Prison Massacre. Like there's pretty much everything I saw at the New Bev, like growing up. It was just something prison women. And most of them are pretty gross and pretty reprehensible. And they're not great rewatch movies because you're like, this is just sad.
Yeah.
But Female Prisoner Scorpion is great because it's really, really stylized. And it's that 70s era of Grindhouse where it's people who were making real movies and like real filmmakers who had an incredible sense of craft and really knew how to make a movie that even though it was cheap or pulpy or exceedingly violent. So there's just beautiful shot after beautiful shot, and it's shot on like such great fucking lenses, man. Those fucking zoom lenses. But so she's in prison. There's the wonderful evil warden character with like an eye patch and
always
shit.
An eye patch.
Yeah, always
every
an
time.
Eye patch. And it's just encounters. It's just these one-offs with, you know, the guards who are beating them and throwing them in chains and putting them in basements.
Making
and
them dig holes.
There's a lot of hole digging, which leads to a very incredible.
I'm sold. Yeah. You can stop right there.
Shovel decapitation.
Oh, yes.
Entirely in slow-mo, and it's just crazy. And there's a lot of curveballs where a woman will just randomly become possessed by a demon.
Yes.
And they have like a knife throwdown in the showers, and it gets very, I won't say like it goes kaboom. I know nothing culturally.
I think it is intentionally, like the makeup at least is like very kabuki theater.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it's very, very expressionistic.
Yeah.
Demonic. So it goes occult as well.
Yes.
Or is that
a little way?
Just
for a scene.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Just for one scene.
Yeah. And the first one, they, you know, spoilers, but they murder everyone and they break out. And part two, which I think is Jailhouse 41, that's my favorite. That's the women on the run. But it all follows this main character. And I don't recall what her name is.
Her last name, I want to say, is Matsumoto, but they call her Matsu.
They call her Matsu in the whole thing. Yeah.
Or it's Sasori or something, which is Japanese for scorpion. They call her like the scorpion woman.
Oh,
so, nice. But she's a lethal killing machine. But these movies are just gross, where everyone in them is a horrible person who usually deserves what they have coming to them.
Yeah.
It's a
spectacular anti-authoritarian message.
Yes.
And I'll go a little bit into the weeds here because I got to see these on Shudder. They were beautifully remastered by Arrow Films, who are known for putting out like a lot of heavy genre. Yeah. They're like the Criterion Collection of genre films.
Yeah.
Even though Criterion does dabble, like they're a little bit more prestige. They're like, we have Ingmar Bergman.
They do Lady Snowblood.
Yeah, they've got Lady Snowblood. Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah.
but they also put out a book, Arrow Books, called Unchained Melody, The Films of Mako Kaji. And Mako Kaji is the woman who plays the female prisoner Scorpion. She was also known at the time for being in these kind of biker girl gang movies called
Stray Cat Rock. Yes. Yeah, those are great. Yes.
So good. And then eventually Lady Snowblood, which I believe is from the guy who wrote like the Lone Wolf and Cub manga.
Yes. Yeah.
So those were turned into movies, and then she did the Lady Snowblood ones. But at the end of the day, she's like the archetype. She's like the Clint Eastwood of action cinema for Japan, because she acts almost entirely with her eyes. She rarely talks. The only time you really hear her is during the theme tune, which she sings.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that was her.
That's awesome.
And I'm glad you mentioned the Kill Bill connection, because not only did Tarantino borrow heavily visually from these movies, but one of the songs that is played in that is like, it's called like The Flower of Carnage, is Mako Kaji. It's one of her songs because she had like a weirdly big like pop career Japan following this. But the reason I wanted to bring these up is because getting into cult film really opens one's horizons. And I think watching your guys' videos, watching the new trash videos, I think there's a lot of that seeping in. A lot of the let's not see low art and high art. Let's just see it all as art. And these things can be so elevated. And just from the way that you guys lovingly talk about these movies, it shows that when you get into cult film, you can learn a lot about movie making from these, because they're real directors making real movies. Yes, we might relegate them, or I think at worst ghettoize them into genre. Like genre is not something that we care about. We don't see as cinema, but it really is. A lot of the techniques in this, you can see in plenty of movies going forward, and it's all from film nerds who got their hands on these.
Yes.
Maybe like VHS era sort of stuff. They're like, yes. Oh, what's this weird stuff from Japan?
You see a dude like Refn, who everybody kind of in our generation really respects, is like this very artsy, very serious filmmaker. And all of his shit is just taken from like Japan.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And
Italy.
It's
on some level, it's kind of just smut in a way. Yeah. Like you watch Drive.
On some level?
Yeah, I was going to say Drive.
It's like people think if you put a blue gel on a light, suddenly that like hammer murder is celebre. Right. Yeah, like.
Oh. But hey, at least he had the balls in The Place Beyond the Pines to remake Psycho, right?
Was that him?
That's not Refn.
That's not Refn.
Isn't it?
It's just somebody
who wanted to be Refn.
That's Blue Valentine. That's that guy.
I'm like 90. I don't know.
It's not fact checking.
You're wrong.
I'm wrong? Do some. No, because that was when he did Only God Forgives.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Was around that time. Neon Demon's pretty crazy.
I rewatched that recently, and my thing with it is like, if you view it through the lens of a really absurd comedy, it works perfectly. Anything else, I do not know if it lands. But, yeah.
But at least he's definitely swinging for the fences.
Oh, yeah.
There's a great video. I wish I had the audio from it. Maybe I'll edit in the audio here.
Yeah.
With where Refn is talking to Billy Friedkin.
Uh-huh.
And
Yeah.
He's like, you think that's a masterpiece? I'm Billy Friedkin!
You don't
he's
know
like,
shit.
Hey, can you guys look this up? Is Drive a masterpiece?
I'm like you. I have no regrets about Only God Forgives. I think it's a masterpiece, and it is. I just didn't make it very expensive.
Is there a doctor in the house? We need to get a medic in here. Is there a doctor around?
I just didn't make
you,
it.
If you think that's a masterpiece, what is Citizen Kane?
It's great. But it's very. It was an inexpensive movie, so financially,
who gives a shit?
He's a great director with the worst director commentaries.
Oh God, they're so bad.
Billy Friedkin, because we were watching like the Killer Joe one. He's like, yeah, so this scene, he does this.
Matthew McConaughey just walks into a room.
Yeah, even the Sorcerer one. He's like, yeah, it was cold. I don't
remember. Billy Friedkin. He's from Illinois. He actually went to Senn High School, dropped out. Or I don't know if he was a dropout, or they had this thing back then where you could just kind of like sort of take like a sabbatical. Take a test, you're done with high school at 16. And he went to, as the story goes, he went to go get a job at the mailroom at NBC5, which is not far from where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
He went to go to the mailroom to get a job at NBC5, and he accidentally went to WGN TV. He's like, hey, I'm here for my interview. And they're like, we don't have an interview with you. And he's like, what? Oh, come on. I want to work in the mailroom. So he had an interview with NBC that he went to the wrong building in, and then ended up getting a job at WGN TV in the mailroom, worked his way up as a director. And so he's like, and then he went on and did like the French Connection. He did a lot of stuff in TV, and then when did the French?
Yeah, he did. Wow. He did like a Death Row doc.
Yeah,
like locally.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
was the big thing for WGN. I think
it was huge. Interesting. Yeah, William fucking Friedkin. Oh my God, what an asshole he is.
Oh, he's such a douche.
I love his movies, and he's got so many weird ones that it's weird that he's held in such wide regard, but he's really only done two movies that were like wildly
popular,
yeah. which is French Connection and The Exorcist.
Right.
Yeah.
Didn't he do Cruisin'?
Cruisin' and Sorcerer.
Sorcerer is awesome.
That's probably my fave.
Yeah. Bug is my favorite.
Bug's great.
His
last Bug and Killer Joe were really nice.
He did one with William Peterson from CSI. Live and Die in L.A.
I haven't seen that. Is that good?
Oh, it's crazy. See, and this is what happens. This is
how did we get onto this trend? Do you guys remember?
Let's bring it back.
We're talking about Shudder.
The ability to go and watch these movies will open your eyes to people's careers in a way that just being like watching the mainstream stuff won't get you. That's how you become a fan of Billy Friedkin, is not just watching French Connection and Exorcist and being like, okay, he's the greatest. But like going deep into that filmography, the stuff that wasn't necessarily successful, and seeing how they grew from it. And even I think De Palma really falls into that category. Mm-hmm. That guy has a weird filmography, very lurid.
His stuff's interesting because it's just Hitchcock, but taken to its real extent, you know,
where those setups are all psychosexual.
Yeah. But all those, even rewatching like Man Who Knew, like just all the old Hitchcock stuff. Yeah. You're like, man, this guy, like, if he could go a little further, he'd go a little further,
and
man.
I think that Psycho was seen as, like, just depraved.
Yeah.
Yes.
When that first came out. That was a depraved film.
It's the first movie with, like, a toilet flush in it, yeah. Right? That's so dumb.
Why is that a thing? Well,
it was the Hays Code, man.
Yeah, they even recognize it.
He's a visionary.
Well, they recognize it in the picture as well, because you've got, never remember these fucking actors' name? Norman Bates.
Yeah.
Anthony Perkins,
who, if you've never seen the Psycho sequels, check them out.
And I believe he directed Psycho 3.
Yeah, 3 and or 4. I know he did at least one of them. And very talented director. Anyway.
Did he direct it as the mom? Or?
But even in the picture, he's just like, oh, this is your bed, and here's the writing desk, and there's the, well, you know.
And that's the fly.
The place where you shit. But anyway. Watch more movies. Well,
watch more movies. Yeah, that's a great stinger.
That's something everyone can agree on.
Let's wrap it all up here. New Trash, where can we see more New Trash content?
You can only see, what's the PBS thing they do? It's you can see more at newtrash.net or follow us on Instagram at New Trash Crew.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think we also have a Twitter, but don't.
No.
But don't.
Could we get it in? Could we get that in Christopher Walken? Maybe.
Hey, New
you
Trash.
You gotta go on the Instagram. The
Who can you do a good? You can do James Mason.
James Mason.
Where can we find James? Where can we find New Trash?
On the Instagrams, you may be able to find Lolita. Where are you?
That's all I got. Okay. Yeah. So you can find us on Instagram, and then you just start shouting out names.
Yeah, exactly. And you guys have had amazing success. Every video I've seen has just felt very you and felt very new. Like it's striking to me to see someone with a style that is recognizable yet always changing, and you're willing to do something different with each video and be like, yeah, let's adapt, let's see what we can do differently, while still being like, yeah, that's a to pull a phrase from Spike Lee, that's a New Trash joint right there, like that. That just is.
That's because we're literally just kidnapping other directors, making them work for us. But yeah, thank you.
Yeah, well, from people who like to, revel in the absurd, from one to the other. Thanks for coming onto the show, and thanks for the releasing the content that you do. We really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate what you guys do, and thanks for having us here. And many blessings upon your microphones as the world turns forward.
Wow, that was beautiful. Yeah. Ooh, wow.
That's a nice way to sign it off there.
All right,
I think that's from The Wire.
Oh, ruined my day.
Oh, shit.
All right, this has been NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we will see you all next time.
Cue James.